CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're going to low Earth orbit, to the ISS, to a new mystery, new cracks. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black, our detective. This is cracks in a Russian module, once upon a time a Soviet module. However, it's not Zvezda. Bob, a very good evening to you. Where and what? Good evening.
Well, let me read what the Vladimir Solovyov, chief engineer of Rocket and Space Corporation Energia, told the Russian news agency about this. Quote, superficial fissures have been found in some places on the Zarya module. This is bad and suggests that fissures will begin to spread over time. Now, Zarya is not the module that they have been finding these stress fracture cracks previously. That was Zvezda. But Zarya is the oldest module on ISS. It was the first launch back in 1998. That's 23 years ago. It's been up for almost a quarter century. It was built several years before that, so this is an old module. It's been around for a while. Now they've discovered the similar type fresh stress fractures. They do not indicate that whether there's any air leaks, but they're seeing evidence of cracks. Now, several things to consider here. One, this is not necessarily indicative of quality control or problems with Russia. If anything, this indicates quality, because they built this thing in the early 90s, mid-90s, basing the construction on what they had learned on their Mir station, which was up for almost 15 years, more than 15 years. The modules for that station had been designed based on what they learned with their previous Salyut stations. And so based on that, they built modules here that lasted more than two decades in space. And we've never done something like this before. So I actually think this is reflects well on the 90s and Soviet era space construction abilities of Russia. Of course, that was a different generation. It's a long time ago. This thing's been up for now for more than two decades, as has Zvezda, the other module where they discovered cracks and where the air leak came from. So now we move into the present time. There's a question that some people have raised that maybe the problems with their new module, Nauka, docked to ISS, both with the kind of impact docking as well as later the out-of-control thruster firing, might have put stress on Zarya, and maybe is where these cracks came from. That's been suggested. I don't know if that's true, but I do know that the age is bringing up stress fractures from various dockings and age and the time and space. What comes next? And that's an unknown question of some concern. These two modules are kind of at the heart of the station. Zarya is docked to the American Unity module, which is what connects us to the Russian half of the station. And so you can't remove it. You depend on it. And to replace it is pretty much impossible because it's in the center of the station. It's the first module launch. Everything was attached to it. And so what happens next? I can't answer that question. This is a serious problem. NASA's talking about extending the life of ISS, but that's absurd. What is in the future almost certainly is that when private companies start to launch modules to attach to ISS, beginning with Axiom's first module scheduled to arrive in 24, that's going to lead to the replacement of ISS, because Axiom, for example, is going to add several modules to its portion of ISS with the goal of eventually detaching from ISS and becoming an independent space station. And that, I think, makes a lot of sense. However, in the interim, what happens to ISS for the next 3 years? Can Zarya be maintained over that time period? I think maybe the Russians have been somewhat innovative in how they repair stations. They have a lot of experience, the most of anybody, include because of Mir, of how to maintain a station in this situation. But it's a significant problem. If we might be facing over the next 5 years, an earlier retirement of ISS than we expected. Can't answer the question, John, but it is not a good situation.
Are there other parts of the space station Russian built that need to be inspected, Bob?
Well, the Russians have a limited number of modules up there. Zvezda, Zarya, they just put Nauka up. I can't remember if there's another module. I don't think there is. There are other components. So this is their, this is their part of the station. Their station was initially designed so that if they wanted to, they could detach from us and run independent. Right. Ours was not. We designed our station, our portion of ISS, dependent on the Russian modules, such as Zarya, especially Zarya and Zvezda. Now, the Zvezda portion was engine firings to keep the orbit up so it wouldn't decay. That has been kind of replaced by both Dragon capsules with its thrusters as well as Japanese HTV freighters. They have also used that to raise the orbit. So we're potentially covered in that respect. But once again, I don't know. There's other components and software that depends on the existence of the Russian modules, and I don't know how we're going
to
fix that.
All right, we're talking big space from the 20th century. Let's go to commercial space from the 21st century. What is Astra?
Astra is one of the many, we'll talk about a few more before this segment's over, small rocket startups that want to build rockets to put small satellites, CubeSats, so forth, into orbit. We have two that are operational, Virgin Orbit and Rocket Lab. Astra was trying this past weekend to become number three. It was attempting its third launch to try to reach orbit, and this was a launch in which they had an Air Force payload on board. It was not going to detach. But anyway, they tried to launch, and at launch, you can go to my website and see the actual live stream of this. At launch, one of the five first stage engines cut off. And so what happens is the rocket starts to tilt over right on the launch pad as it lifts off, and then it rights itself as it slides sideways and then manages to lift off. Now, at that moment in time, it seems the mission controllers knew this thing was over. They couldn't make orbit. What they decided to do was get it up into the air as high as possible so it was clear of land and then terminate the mission, and that's what they did. And so there's several negatives and positives. They didn't get their launch off. They had a failure. But they showed their software and their mission control was able to control this in an intelligent way. And so this gives them more data for later missions. Their stock has plummeted by about 24% since this happened, since it is publicly traded. But I wouldn't put this company out of business yet. They got contracts, and I think they'll get this fixed.
Germany's – remember, the spread of commercial space is in all directions.
Yes, Germany has three rocket companies that, like Astra, that are trying to launch small sat rockets. And so one of those companies, Rocket Factory Augsburg, that has successfully completed a tank pressure test of its rocket's core first stage. And it was a successful test to failure. They blew the thing up. They were basically testing how much pressure the tanks could hold, and they continued to add pressure until the thing exploded. And so this is testing the welds and the design, and they now know the capacity and its maximum pressure that it can hold, and that's a very good thing. They hope down the road to launch in 22 for their first flight, and by 24 be operational. There's real competition in Germany for three different companies. They'll launch from Norway. This is spreading, John. It's getting pretty exciting.
Although there is the irony, Bob, that this is where the rockets came that started the program in the Soviet Union and in America. So we're back to the beginning in German rocketry. Now we have.
I should point out, John, quickly, that these small sat rockets are very comparable in size and power to the V2 rocket, but they're of course much more sophisticated with modern technology. But we're basically seeing the V2 rocket in a different form returning to Germany.
Yes, 75 years later, we go to South Korea again. This is everybody getting into the rocket business. Is this also for small sat, Bob?
No, it appears to me that they're trying to build a rocket that can compete with larger payloads. The initial configuration won't be so large, but they're designing it so that they can scale it up to do bigger payloads. South Korea has launched satellites before, but they've been using, in the past, they used Russian-built components to make the rocket. This will be, it's called Nuri. This will be their first home-built entirely rocket. They've now targeted an October 21st launch date. That's only, what is it, a month and a half away. And they're hoping that this will be the first of two launches. The second launch will be in May of next year. And they're hoping between those two launches that they will have gotten figured out how to do this and they'll be ready to do operational flights. You know, and once again, to compete.
It occurs to me, Bob, that there's now a culture of rocket booster building. It's no longer just publicity. It's world scale, and it suggests that the employees are finding recruiting around the world. You're no longer limited to this or that country. You can job shop anywhere.
That's part of it. It's a little complicated because this is missile technology, so there's strict rules. So an American citizen can't necessarily go over to a foreign country so easily. But nonetheless, what happens is the technology is now becoming very ubiquitous. And so everyone's picking up on it. If they have to design it from scratch themselves, they're doing it. But there's plenty of data out there. They can figure out from what others have done what to do.
Yeah, and they all watch Elon Musk on YouTube and go, I can do that. Okay, space.
Yeah.
Space junk is a problem that's growing, Bob. Is there a solution?
Well, there are several companies that are trying to figure out a way to make money doing this and do it. And so there is a Japanese-based company called Astroscale that has now successfully completed in orbit a test of what they call a magnetic capture device. This is a device using magnetism to capture a space junk or a satellite. And so what has happened here, what they did was they launched this CubeSat about 2 months ago, and while it's been in orbit, it has a target and a target portion that they separated and then used their magnetic capturing plate to capture it again. And they're going to do all kinds of further tests with this, including one in which they'll release it and tumble it and see if the capture satellite can match tumbles and capture a tumbling satellite. Their goal is to get satellite manufacturers, and they have a deal with OneWeb, by the way, to get satellite manufacturers to include their magnetic capture plate, target plate, on their satellites so that if the satellite needs to be removed, they could launch one of these things, capture multiple satellites on a single flight, and then deorbit them all in a bunch. And that's their plan. They're looking to make money on it. And since satellite companies are putting up lots of constellations of satellites, they need some way to get them down, and this is one option, and that's what they're aiming for.
Bob, if you launch a satellite, do you have to pay a fee if it becomes damaging to other satellites? Is there a liability, a risk for launching a wayward satellite?
The Outer Space Treaty is very clear. You are liable for what you launch, so you have to keep it from damaging others. And there is no clear process for obtaining, reparations for damage. But I would say that most companies take that very seriously because they get sued, and so they try to think of it. As for example, in the last 2 weeks, about a dozen Starlink satellites have deorbited because SpaceX puts on their satellites, those Starlink satellites, methods for getting them off the ground back to Earth for the same reason, to prevent these kind of problems. But right. There are other, this is just another approach to it, and there's money to be made in doing it.
Right. It occurs to me that you can lease, if you're a deorbiter, you can make money by selling your services to people who are at risk because their satellites are either poorly launched or old or they're space junk.
That's right. That's exactly what Astroscale's business model is. It's exactly what they're doing. They're offering to satellite companies, here's something you can add to your satellite that will allow us to remove it for a fee. And so it's a deal.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black that is heavily leaning towards commercial space, but we're going exploring next. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.